This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
In wrestling, indies, and international. I am Pete. I'm joined by my friend Timothy. Timothy, how's it going?
Oh, phenomenal. Another week of work down. Got a weekend of wrestling going to PWG. Kind of snuck up on me. PCW next week. Excited for that as well. So I'm just cruising through it, man.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I have Wrestle Circus tomorrow night. I have Inspire Pro the following Sunday, and then I get ready for Mania weekend and all the shows that are going to accompany that. So, yeah, definitely ready for some more live wrestling. I love it. Best thing in the world. But, hey, let's get right into this stuff. We have our normal shows to review, and the one we're going to the special one we're going to do is the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. But before we get into that, man, seems like they're getting pretty fluid again on who's there, who's not there. Looks like Bobby Fish is now going to be gone from them in the next week or two. And Leo Rush is starting working in the Evolve shows over Mania weekend, which would suggest he's kind of... I know his contract isn't exclusive, but it's pretty odd that he'd be working on all these Evolve shows when it's Ring of Honor is going to be there. So it looks like they're losing some more talent, along with, if you haven't read, I mean, Adam Cole just dropped the belt, so it looks like he's on his way out, too. I mean, that's three big guys leaving the company, huh?
Yeah, no, I think, was it Cole? It's 1st of May? I think that's when his contract is officially up. That's public info, because he even said it on an interview with, I think, with Brian Alvarez. So he's out, I mean, probably. Kyle O'Reilly's gone, obviously. Bobby Fish, they announced that he had signed a deal. Then it turned out it was one of these, same thing with the Hardy Boys, short-term deal. So he's gone. And you know, you notice he said that he's taking independent, you know, freelance bookings for a time being. So who knows? He may come and go. You had Leo Rush, a very interesting turn of events with him as I think it was announced that he was doing Evolve, then it was redacted, then it was re-announced, and I think ROH still didn't get the hint that he was probably not going to renew on the contract. And as far as I know, I think that is the case. I think Leo Rush is pretty much gone from ROH unless they want to use him on a per-appearance basis. So yeah, it is kind of interesting. Then you got guys like Michael Elgin, who works with New Japan and theoretically should be coming in for these joint showings, who has expressed no interest in coming back to ROH in any way, and also Kenny Omega, who's kind of played nice in the public eye, but from all reports that I've heard, he also has no interest in going into ROH, even if he does get to work with the Young Bucks and have fun. So they're kind of in a weird situation now.
Yeah, and then you hit on the Hardys. They'll be gone pretty much after WrestleMania, pretty close to it. I mean, gosh. And then if you look at it, we mentioned Leo Rush, we mentioned Bobby Fish, and we mentioned Adam Cole. And you could arguably say they had the three best matches on the show.
Right, and then, you know, two guys that aren't even here didn't have matches. War Machine... Or I guess they did have a match on here, and with the War Machine, I mean, they're likely gone as well, at least, you know, one of the members, or possibly both.
Yeah, I haven't heard a whole lot on that horizon. I've heard they want to stay together as a team, and I think now that they're going to be getting Japan bookings, I think they might be staying.
Right, I mean, they've worked New Japan, and they've worked Noah, and now Noah has a partnership with, you know, TNA, Crash, and I think that's it, actually. Well, maybe someone else, but... So it is interesting to think. I mean, they could... Theoretically, I think everyone's been saying Ray Rowe is going to Evolve, but the holdup is that he wants Hansen to go with him, and Evolve may or may not have any interest in him, so they may stay with ROH due to that, but then there is other options. I mean, no one's really even talked about it, but what about War Machine going to the new TNA? They seem to be... The new TNA seems to be pretty interested in having a robust tag team, and I feel like War Machine, to me, is the one I mean, the one American team that I constantly think of when I think of dream matches. I mean, there's teams in, I mean, not even a lot of teams in the UK, but there's teams in Japan as well where you think of dream match situations. But for the most part, for me, when I'm thinking about a dream tag team match, I'm constantly thinking about, oh, what about this team versus War Machine? You know, so I think they're a team that do have the kind of have the cachet that I think that they could kind of go anywhere they want almost.
Yeah, it's interesting times, I'll tell you that. And I just would not want to be in Ring of Honor's shoes, man. They're just losing talent, and they have a hard problem developing talent, or by the time they're ready to push them, they're, you know. In the past, they used to have this, they could take their time, and you know, they'd bring in a talent and let them, you know, job them out early and then rebuild them. And nowadays, man, they don't have that luxury because people, they're not going to stay around for it, you know?
Right, yeah. And we're not seeing, I mean, we're seeing Marty Scurll every week, but we're not seeing Will Ospreay anywhere near as much. And he had a match with Dragon Lee that was on the, you know, Manhattan Mayhem instead of on the pay-per-view here. And he, you know, wasn't on the pay-per-view at all. So it's kind of interesting in that regard, too, because, you know, that was the big 1-2 punch is that they, the one-up that they got on WWE Evolve, or WWN, whatever, you know, that whole amalgamation of guys, was that they got Ospreay and Scroll, and yeah, they're using Scroll, but they're not using Ospreay, so it kind of defeats the purpose of having gotten, like, the one-up on getting Ospreay there.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, they're almost, I mean, you think about it, in 4 months, man, it just seems like it's going to be a bare cupboard of stars, you know? It's going to be Dalton Castle and the Briscoes and the Bucks, man, and that's going to be pretty scary, you know? I mean, I guess putting the belt on Christopher Daniels is a smart play because, you know, he's not going anywhere, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's smart, and he's got himself in a political position, and who knows what he thinks about going forward, if this is a retirement tour of sorts, as he does kind of go back into the full-time behind the scenes, but I get what you're saying, because, I mean, when they're in flux, he's a guy that they can count on to stick around for a while. And he carries decent matches. But, you know, another thing, we talk about all this moving back and forth, another kind of, you know, indie wrestling hot topic right now is these tweets coming out from, you know, obviously Kevin Condren about Chikara, then other guys are chiming in and all this and that. And not just Chikara, but in general, I mean, is part of the problem that too many of these companies think that they've gotten away for so long underpaying these guys, and that's why they don't really have a lot of kind of, like, I guess what's the word I'm looking for, like, they don't really feel like they need to stick around for the company because the company's not taking care of them as well as they could?
Yeah, there's no loyalty factor.
Yeah, do you think that's kind of what's missing? Do you think, or maybe, the you know, wrestling is kind of getting a little bit hot again and people are seeing there's money to be made, so they're just trying to flock to where the money can, where the money's at?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, like, you know, I mean, right now it's a big open market. A lot of, you know, there's a lot of places where you can work. I mean, and so you don't, I mean, if you're going to get underpaid, I mean, then hell, why would you want to work where you're not going to get, where you can go somewhere else and get paid more money?
Yeah, right. And if you, I mean, it, and the other thing too, if you're going to get underpaid, that's the thing that they make the argument about the Bucks, about why they're not going to go to NXT because they're taking a pay cut. But if you're almost any other guy and you're not taking a pay cut to go to NXT, why wouldn't you? Because then you're at least, for a lot of these guys now, I mean, the wrestlers are starting to be younger than me, which is a scary thought. But for a lot of these guys now, their dream has been WWE and that's it because nothing else existed. So why stick around in ROH and try to help another company build when you could go work for the dream company in WWE? I mean, look at, it's a weird thing to think about, but look at Kevin Owens. That's what he said. I mean, part of, he could command any price he wanted on the indies. He was in high demand. He worked every weekend. He actually had more time off and made more money, but he said, I want to go to WWE because that's my dream job, you know, because that's what I thought of as a kid, is working there. And he went, and it worked out for him. But all these other guys, I mean, they're going to do the same thing.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily will work out, but, you know. And, but, you know, about indies being hot, the one thing I hear is, like, the tickets for these shows, this Mania, are down compared to last year's.
Yeah, I'm hearing that, too. And, I mean, just, I guess, coincidentally, it's not the same thing, but the tickets for the PCW show next weekend are soft. I mean, from what I can tell, usually they're announcing that they're sold out by this point on all the different tiers, and this time they're kind of still trying to sell front row tickets the last I checked. Maybe they're sold out by now, but it is kind of interesting that that the indie markets in some ways might be already contracting, which is kind of crazy, but it could have to do with, again, WWE is saturating the market with, you know, with their UK tournaments and with NXT shows. And with that weekend, I mean, you could have a busy weekend, WrestleMania weekend in Orlando, just going to WWE/WWN sponsored events. And I don't think, how are you going to go to anything else? There's not enough time in the day.
Yeah, it's like me and Johnny P are all going straight, we're doing straight WWN shows. I mean, because we run in a house that's 5 minutes away from where the WWN is running, and that made it easy for us, you know. It felt like the NXT tickets were just too expensive to go. I mean, Johnny P's not even going to Mania because he's not a big show guy. He likes going to the smaller buildings, and I can understand and respect that. But yeah, it's just like, it's like I get more bang for the buck going to the indie shows too, because you're getting you get better seats. You know, we're paying $25 for general admissions, and you know, you can get with JGA, you can get fifth row, so it's not like you're in like so far away you can't see or anything. So it's you just got to get there early so you can get those good general admission seats. And you get more bang for your buck, and there's going to be a lot of wrestling. I mean, we just picked up our Beyond tickets. I bought them for us this morning, and so now, I mean, we have I think about 8 shows we're going to, or something like that, and that's a lot for 2 days, you know.
Yeah, no, that's an insane amount of wrestling to go to over the span of, did you say 2 days, 8 shows?
Yeah, I think it was maybe 6 shows. I mean, I have my tickets are all there, and I have, let's see, we have Janela, we have Beyond. We're doing the 2 midnight shows on Thursday and Friday, or Friday and Saturday, I think they are. And then we have we have the Progress show. I think there's 2 Evolve shows, and then the Super show. Okay, so we have 6 shows. And then I have Mania also, on Sunday. So I mean, yeah, so 6 shows in 2 days, that's a lot. And then we're gonna watch NXT special at the house on the computer we're gonna, you know, watch that.
Yeah, that's probably the way to do it, honestly. I can't imagine like raking up the cash at this point for NXT, especially. I mean, I don't know, the shows just aren't that hot, so.
Yeah, it doesn't even seem like I'm dying to see, I mean, Nakamura, Rude, I've seen it. I'm not into, like, I've gone on record where I think I've said I hate 3-way tag matches, so the big selling point is that. I'm not all that hot for Asuka and Ember Moon, the Sanity feud, so the whole show doesn't seem hot for me anyway, so. But again, neither did the last one. And I thought they kicked ass. So, who knows?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But yeah, but there's a lot of interesting happening, and that's the thing, is like there's so much wrestling to watch. You can find something that interests you and like it. I mean, Netflix. Lucha Underground is on Netflix, so make them a little bit more hotter again. With people being able to catch up on Netflix. I don't know how I've seen online people seem like they're watching it, who have never watched it before, because it's a lot of people, I mean, they don't get Lucha El Rey, El Rey Network on their cable and stuff. So this is for good. It's cool for them to have exposure too, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I'm also hearing a lot of people saying they're watching it for the first time, but
yeah.
I mean, we'll see if that means anything, though.
But a lot of their talent's gotten over, and they're making, they're some of the bigger draws on the indie scene, because Lucha Underground doesn't run house shows, you know?
Right, and I mean, and a lot of their talent are interested in
Pentagon, Brian Cage. I mean, all 3 of those guys are big draws on the indies, you know?
Yeah, no, and that's the thing, is they're doing so well with that they're not, a lot of them are not interested in going back to Lucha Underground, because they feel like they're getting more bang for their buck just headlining these indie shows that are top draws.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think they make their money because of the television. I think it goes hand in hand. Where if they're not on the TV, I don't think they could demand as much money as they're making.
Yeah, and they may not realize that, and they think, oh, you know, I don't want to get tied down.
They might think it's them and not the I'm getting exposure from Lucha Underground, because, I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, we quit reviewing it, but there's a lot of hardcore Lucha Underground fans out there.
Yeah, and I think that the first season still has goodwill, so, you know, it showing up on Netflix when it did, I do hear a lot of people even rewatching it talking about how much they liked it, so there, you know, there is a lot to say for that, for just, like, people enjoyed the first season a lot.
And even the second season, there was a lot to like, you know, it's just, I thought the third season was where I felt it really fell off the hinges and stuff, or just got old, because it never evolved, it was kind of the same stuff, you know?
Yeah, no, that was definitely the case, I think, for a lot of the third season. And I mean, I've gone on record saying I didn't much appreciate it, but I could, like, from the start, I wasn't a huge fan of Lucha Underground, but I could appreciate it. And then towards the end, it did kind of turn into, it was just getting harder. Yeah, and impossible to watch.
Yeah, it became a total character. I mean, there's one thing to be outlandish, but it became a character of itself in a way. But hey, let's move on to what we're watching right now. And we opened up with the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. And it starts with a Christopher Daniels promo and an Adam Cole promo, mixing the two of them. And I thought they did a really good job here. What about you?
Yeah, and I like that they've kind of gone to doing this. It's their thing. I mean, they open almost every pay-per-view this way, and I think it's a lot better to do that, you know, to have a signature style that's, again, different and other than what is being, you know, produced on the mainstream wrestling companies.
Oh, totally, totally. And then we open up with Jay White versus Kenny King. What were your main takeaways from this match?
I mean, the athleticism of the match is good. White completely whiffs a dropkick early. Then he goes for the Kokeshi as a kind of thing for the Hanma. He has to kind of prod the crowd to give him a Hanma chant. Or it may even also be that the miking wasn't great in there. Because from my experience, the Samtown building is super hot and the crowd seems to really be into the shows, but it didn't come across on the TV from, you know, what I've watched back from the shows that I was there. But then from there, I felt like Kenny King, there's not much to his heel character than just being cocky, and I don't think that really in this day and age that works. When you got an act like the Young Bucks on the top, I mean, cocky doesn't make you a heel. So, again, as I said, the actual athleticism here is good. The, you know, King with the over-the-shoulder GTS looks good, shotgun knees, exploder suplex. But then, I mean, the crowd is chanting for him, and it's very clear that the point is for King to be a heel and for White to be a babyface. But, I mean, the crowd split 50-50, and White has been nothing but, a white meat babyface, as they say. Super hot comebacks, fiery here. But, I mean, he's getting 50-50 chance with Kenny King, who should be 100% a heel. So I felt like it was ineffective in that way. And I feel like they've done such a great job booking White with the way that they've built him over this year. But he just doesn't feel important. I mean, they pushed him hard out the gate, but it's like, yeah, he's undefeated. Yeah, he's great, but he feels so inconsequential. And then having him work just this match with Kenny King that felt like gave neither of these guys any steam. I give it 2 3/4 stars. As I said, athleticism, everything else, crisp, on point, great. But the narrative, the structure, the psychology, it's just not there. And it didn't feel like, it really felt like a random match thrown on as a hot opener that did nothing for either guy.
Yeah, I liked it a little bit more than you. I gave it 3 1/4, but I totally see where you're coming from. I kind of liked how it was a slow building at first. And I liked, you know, I thought it was a nice little touch of White with the homage to Honma. King with the corkscrew plancha was a really nice move. Well, White with the tope on Coleman, which I liked. King's offense, though, is just too babyface-ous. It's just too flashy. And I really, you know what? I don't mind flashy heel moves if they do it in the right manner. And I think it works better when you're a heel and you're doing flashy moves and in a tag team when you're, like, I like the Kingdom, even though they have, I thought their heel psychology is really good because they're doing double teams and this and this. But they might have a flashy move here and there, but it's usually when they're cheating or doing a double team. Now, if their King was doing some flashy move with, like, Coleman distracting White or the ref, it would make more sense and I could buy into it. It's not just that he's doing. I wouldn't mind him doing the flashy move. It's just how he does it and the package of how he's doing it. And when you have a second who has a lot of experience like Coleman, they can actually hide the fact that he's doing flashy moves by Coleman and setting up interference spots, then to do the flashy move. So the bottom line, he's still being a heel while doing it, but they just goes over their head. I thought Coleman was really strong here as a second, though, and I like the finish of the inside cradle off the Death Valley Driver. I thought that was really good, but yeah, I totally see where you're coming from. I enjoyed this because of the athleticism, but King, if you just take a little bit of time, watch the match back, and you know, he could actually, you know, present his stuff in a heelish manner, and still keep the sizzle if he wants. But it's how they present it.
I feel like it almost comes across, and I hate to say it, but like a little bit too, and I don't even know if he 100% ascribes to this philosophy, but he's always kind of laid at his feet. But the kind of the Jim Cornette thing where it's like, oh, go out there and be a flashy black man and be cocky and the crowd will hate you. And it's kind of like, no, that doesn't really get heat at all anymore.
Not anymore. Maybe it might happen. Maybe some of the indies that like Dylan and his dad might go to in Atlanta Empire. That might work there, where there's still some mentality to that, and that's not just not a knock just towards Atlanta. I mean, it's definitely, you could go to some small Texas town and you could probably get that type of heat, but it all has to do with presentation. But that's not how wrestling presented anymore, so it's hard to get that type of heat.
Yeah, and again, no knock to Georgia or Texas, because if you remember, you know, California was the first state to elect Ronald Reagan, so there's some indies here where it would probably work too, but I don't think it's going to work in ROH in Las Vegas. It just doesn't get over.
Yeah, no. Yeah, not Las Vegas. then we got the Kazarian promo with the club, and, you know, it's funny, and we'll get to it later, but I actually thought Kazarian, since his partner has the belt, I thought Kazarian in the club actually kind of made sense for a spot, and I thought he fit perfect, because he's not a guy who can be the man, but I always thought he's a good hanger-on type of worker, if that makes any sense, huh?
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but I don't know that I thought that he was a good fit for Bullet Club in other ways.
I thought he had the cocky swagger, and I just thought he without Daniels, that he didn't really have like a spot in a way. And so I thought it was going to work, but I mean, they're obviously going with a different direction.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see what you're saying. There's something to Kaz to me, though, that comes across like he's okay playing second fiddle to someone like Daniels, yeah, because he has respect for him, but he's too, how do I put it? He's too brash and too kind of angsty, even as an older man, to I think to ever play like second fiddle to someone like Cody Rhodes.
Oh yeah, I understand that, but the whole, you know, but I can see him with the Bucks or Omega or even Adam Cole in a way. But,
yeah, that's for sure.
Then we got this spot fest with Kazarian and Adam Page and Sabin and Martinez and Young and who else? There's one other guy. Cheeseburger. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good 3.5-star just spot fest. I mean, this has become like a token match on all the indies, where they throw like 5 or 6 guys in and you watch them hit all these cool spots and big dives and stuff. For me, even though Kazarian wins it, I thought it really made Martinez. I thought it was the best. I mean, I thought when he was in the actual top prospect tournament last year in the finals, I thought he looked fantastic with Leo Rush. And I was, me and Johnny at the time were like, yeah, this guy has something. They need to sign him. And then he wasn't around for a while. They finally brought him in. And, you know, they give him kind of a shitty gimmick with I liked his original Punisher Martinez, but I'm sure that because of Marvel, that's why they changed him to Punishment Martinez, which just sounds lame. But the dude's big, athletic. And I think he has something. And honestly, I'd push the guy to the moon and put the belt on him almost, because he just seems like the real deal in a way, and he just stands out to the rest of the roster. Do you think I'm jumping the gun on this guy, or
not at all? And you skipped over the brief period in there where they were calling him Damian Martinez.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, and too.
Yeah, so I mean, they've been all over the place with the names on the guy. So I've taken to just referring to him as Big Pun. I feel like it's a cooler name. It'll get over with the kids from the streets as they love the hip hop music. So to me, yeah, and I think you look over something else. The guy trained with Matt Riddle. So you've got this connection to Matt Riddle that instantly makes him cool.
Yeah, I forgot about that. They're good friends, and originally Riddle and him were pitching a group together.
Yeah, they were the Real Life Heels, and they had another guy in the group too. And so it's like you've got that connection. I mean, it's not bad to have a guy in your company that you're pushing well, treating well, who's happy with the company, who's got connections to one of the hottest acts in wrestling. Because, I mean, theoretically, Riddle has a contract, but stuff is so all up in the air, and he even talks about not liking having a contract, so who knows. But yeah, I mean, the guy is big, great look, super athletic. I've liked him since day one, and for me, in some ways, day one was actually day negative one, because I was watching the Monster Factory stuff is when I started to like him. So when they were bringing him into ROH, I was like, oh, good shit, you know, I like this guy. And you're so right. I mean, from the start of the match, it's all about making him look big and tough, and then they use that they've already built in, that he's the big man, to put over the Bullet Club team as they work together to take out the big man. So it's like this whole match was built around him. They even turn him face here, which then, you know, turns out to be kind of a wink and a nod to what happens on the TV that just feels all awkward as all hell. But, I mean, him blocking the rite of passage from Paige on the apron was the biggest crowd pop of the match. They were super into him saving Cheeseburger's life and then hitting that big choke slam. And, you know, throughout the whole beginning of the match, though, I noticed Silas Young disappears. And then when he finally does come back in, it's to build up drama with interaction with Cheeseburger. So I kind of love that Silas, he didn't involve himself in the spot fest. He took himself out of that, and then he came in just to set up the drama and the heat segment. Bully. Yeah, so I thought that was great. Saban, I mean, one of the craziest spots I've ever seen, Saban jumps up the back of Kaz like a poetry in motion to grab Paige off the top with a German suplex. I thought that was fucking nuts. And so, yeah, I thought, you're right. I mean, the guy who got over the most of this match was Big Pun. They made him look like a big fucking deal. And, you know, Kaz gets the win. I thought that they said this was for the world championship number one contender, but I guess it's the TV title.
Yeah,
so I figured, oh, well, if he wins this, then Daniels has to win the title, because at the time I thought it was for the world title. But it even still makes sense with it being the TV title. And I gave this 3.25 star. I thought that they did such a great job here making a six-man match not feel like a waste. Also not really feel completely like a spot fest. And I said the first match felt like it did nothing for anybody. It felt like this match did a lot for a lot of guys.
Yep, totally agree. What do you think of Fish and Lethal?
I like the familiarity between the two. They have great chemistry from the way that they kind of have been longtime ROH workers. I think that's something that comes with a lot of the guys that stay in ROH for a while, because they do so many house shows together. And they kind of are on the road so much that they really work together super well after this much time. I loved, you know, Fish gets the hip toss drop kick from Lethal, and he hits the floor instantly. Lethal's telling the referee to knock off the count, trying to hold the ropes open for Fish, and Fish is like, no, I don't need that shit. You know, I don't need your courtesy. I'm not falling for that, blah, blah, blah. So Lethal tries to come at him with a dive, and I love the way Fish directions him to fall onto the rail, and then he's all over the arm from there, because Lethal catches himself underneath the armpit, so he's working over the arm, going after that. Then, yeah, that's where there starts to be some drama. There's really a lot of back and forth in the match, but, you know, as I said, the chemistry and the familiarity with each other makes it work as a competition where they're so kind of used to each other that they can do that. They can counter each other, and they can counter counters, and they're thinking steps ahead because they know each other so well. I thought that, you know, Fish countering the Lethal Injection into the knee bar looked great as he's, you know, mid-flip. He flips him back over and grabs the leg. But in that moment, I was thinking, God, I wish he was going for that arm that he worked over early on. But when you turn around and Lethal then gets the win still, I find it acceptable, you know, because Fish didn't go after the arm that he worked earlier, so that's why he doesn't get the win in the end. I guess that, you know, that logic kind of works out for me, but I do like to see Fish a lot more focused after having so much attack on the arm. I feel like he should have gone for an arm submission at the end there. I gave this 3.5 stars, and yeah, I think that this match was a match where I really, at the end of it, I said, even if, you know, it's not true, and I told you the anecdote of hearing people at the ROH shows, like, talking about Lethal, like, one of the greatest in the world, one of the best wrestlers, like, even if it's not necessarily true, ROH does such an amazing job of protecting Lethal that he feels like he's really special in ROH. Yeah. So, yeah, I gave this 3.5 stars, and I thought both guys really, really brought it here.
Yeah, I went 4 stars, and I thought this was my favorite match of the night. I really liked the grappling early on. That kick by Fish was stiff as hell. I thought stuff really built well here. I thought Lethal's tope when he hits the guardrail and Fish maneuvers him to direct him and to hit the guardrail was great. And Fish was great working over the chest area. I like that. I thought the heel hook had loads of drama both times he hooked it on. And I really thought Fish was stiff as fuck in this match and really was laying it in on Lethal on Fish's way out. I don't know. It just felt like Lethal owed him money or something. But a damn good match. What do you think of... I'm sorry. Then we have the Kingdom versus Castle and the Boys. You know, I've been on top record many a times thinking Castle and the Boys are a great six-man act, and they don't push the Boys really strong enough on their television because they're actually a damn good babyface blowjob tag team, and we got to see it here. They open up with dueling promos and stuff, but man, I thought this match was really going strong until TK Orion just fucked up that ankle on the moonsault. And hits the guardrail, man. That was nasty. But, man, I thought the Kingdom psychology was here. Whenever they used their big moves, it was usually in a double or triple team setting, so it came across as heel-ish. They used the numbers game to do their advantage. I thought both boys looked good. That bump he took on the apron and landed his head on the floor was sick as fuck. Dalton... all you really need to do is a couple suplex spots and his charisma, because I thought the Boys really carried the end on their side for him and stuff. I like the twin magic being used to set up stuff for like their comebacks. I really like that. I didn't like Cabana here on commentary where he's burying the Boys. And in essence, burying Ring of Honor's booking on how he beat them in a handicap match. How does that help sell this match or get this match over? I'll tell you, it doesn't. Really fun shine. I love the cheat to set up the heat on that big nasty bump. Loving the multi-man spots by the Kingdom again. I loved. The spot to set up the hot tag was great, and we got a little sloppy at spots, but overall I thought it was really great until they had to go into the finish all of a sudden. I still gave it 3.5 stars. I was really impressed on what I saw. Well, what'd you make of it?
I'm right there, pretty much right there with you. I thought the Boys did great filling in their roles and letting Castle be kind of the window dressing while they were the most of the meat of the match, which I thought was fantastic. Because they are a really good tag team, and Castle's obviously super over for his spots. Again, the Kingdom, I think that they've refined the stuff that we kind of loved from the Kingdom with Bennett. They kind of refined a lot of that in the trios, having, again, the flashiness with the high flying, and then also the way that they do it in a really snide, shitty way. And yeah, I mean, TK Orion, the story is he broke the tibia and the fibia, so it was split essentially in half in the shin. The guy's out for a while, and here's the interesting question. Would it make sense to bring back Mike Bennett if they could? Because he's leaving TNA, and, you know,
yeah.
Could you makes, do... Oh, go ahead.
It makes sense, but you know what? If they don't get him, the guy who was on TV this week, I thought would be a good Kingdom replacement in Leo St. Giovanni.
Oh, yeah. I could definitely see that, too. That is a good point.
It'd be cheaper.
Yeah, it'd definitely be cheaper. And maybe would keep them from possibly going back to the same tropes of the old Kingdom, because I think the new Kingdom Act is actually working better.
It's fresher.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. So I just, that was a thought that came out in my head, because I'm like, oh, geez, you know, he's done with TNA and it's kind of right around the same time. But I give this 2¾ star. I think the rush finish at the end and the way that it kind of fell apart, just it took it down a little bit for me. But I'm totally with you, because I think I probably would have been up in that range, 3.5, if they had been able to finish the match the way it was supposed to, because it was really, to me, it was really cooking until that happened.
Yeah, I think if you bring Bennett back, it kind of ends up hurting Taven's character, because he's technically the leader of this group, or he's been presented as the leader. And then if you bring Bennett and Maria back, it definitely comes back to them being the alpha pairing in the group. So if they do that, they might do it for a temporary fix and then break him off and have a feud once TK comes back, you know?
Yeah, and I think that could work, and they kick him out, essentially. And that's even what I was thinking, is you do a short-term thing with Bennett, you know, and then he goes somewhere else, possibly, you know, after once TK Orion's ready to come back.
Yeah. Next up, we got Marty Scurll versus Leo Rush defending the TV title. What were you thinking here?
Some good stuff from Scurll here with the, you know, connecting on the shoulder, working it over as much as he can. Kind of high speed, or, you know, he's going after him, and then Rush comes, when Rush starts his comeback with his high speed attacks, I feel like the crowd was a little quiet. It didn't feel like they were super into him as much as I would hope for. The super kick on the Scurll gets Rush caught inside the ring apron, and then hits multiple super kicks. I thought that was pretty good, as Scurll was really looking extra vicious in this match, and I like that a lot. But then, I mean, this is a problem that I have with Leo Rush. I mean, in general, I like him, but I don't necessarily know that with his size, he's a great babyface, and it kind of sucks, because he can kind of fire up, and a lot of times he does it well, where it comes across that he's, you know, imposing and threatening even for a little guy. But here, I mean, him, like, essentially going for the title belt because he's so pissed off. Like, I just feel like that's not... It didn't work in the same way, and it came across too heelish for me. And in this match, I think he should have been babyface. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, and I mean to every time, but I really hate the way that Scurll does the pile driver, where he lets go of the guy right before he hits the ground. I heard Chris Hero talking about delivering pile drivers and said, you know, making sure that you grab hold of the guy to keep it safe, and I feel like letting go of someone like that is not safe. And then off of that pile driver, Colt Cabana, you mentioned his shitty commentary before, he literally calls out Leo Rush for no selling in this, yeah, during this match. He's like, oh yeah, you could do whatever you want to Leo Rush, though, because a little while later it obviously didn't hurt him. And it's just like, ah, oh, Jesus. And then talking about Leo Rush is not hooking the leg after he hits the Rush Hour and stuff. So, yeah, Colt Cabana was somewhat annoying there. But, yeah, I think that there was some stuff towards the end where there was definitely some near falls that I bit onto and I got into, and the crowd got into as well. But realistically for me, like, really good near falls don't do a lot for me. So that doesn't really, like, make me think of the match better, but I think that they did do a good job with that. Hitting two Tower of the Londons, I felt like it was major overkill. And Scurll locks in the chicken wing, and I love that he's ripping off the KT tape and he's really going for it, but then again, he's just kind of pulling at his jawline instead of really locking it in. And I probably sound like I'm ripping this part of this match apart, but realistically, I gave it 3 stars. I thought a lot of the stuff that they did was really good here, but Leo Rush could slow down. Leo Rush could kind of focus more on keeping his character as a babyface. He could sell more. And when I say slow down, I don't mean don't be really high octane with your offense, but I do mean sell in between moves. I feel like Scurll could be a little bit more focused on his fundamentals, but realistically, I don't think he cares, because he's super over, and, I mean, that's really what matters. So, you know, all in all, it was a good match, but I don't know. I even feel like thinking back on it, 3 stars is too high, but I don't think it's right to go back and change the grade just based on talking about it, so I'd have to rewatch it to say, but we'll give it 3 stars for now.
Yeah, I liked it more than you. I went 3 3/4. I thought Skrull came... I mean, he has a lot of flaws in the ring, but the one thing he doesn't is he comes across as a star, which is something you really can't really teach. I like the way he worked the crowd early on. I like Skrull on the arm, and it's just destroying it. Rush tried to come back, only to get cut off. I like that. Finally, he gets a comeback, and Rush is really awesome in his comeback. Love the near submission with the, what's it? I'm trying to think what it was. Crossface chicken wing. Loved seeing the pile driver reversals get over, because that was a spot. That was it was like a trope in WCW, and it was a spot that always got over, but it's like a spot where people don't do much anymore, and when they do, they don't get much reaction. But for some reason, WCW, that spot always got over, so it was cool to see it. I thought the belt spot made no sense whatsoever from Rush, and then the chair set up again made zero sense, and I thought it went a little too long. I thought they were cooking, but they just made a couple mistakes for me that took the match off of a top tier type of match. Next up was War Machine and Davey Boy Smith versus the Briscoes and Bully Ray, and I like this match too, man. I gave it 3.5, a big shine to start. War Machine cuts the cuts it off. War Machine using double teams moves and beating up on Davey Boy. I'm not Davey Boy, beating up on the Briscoes. I like Davey Boy Smith working over Mark Briscoe in a violent fashion. I liked Bully Ray and Briscoes. I really like that team. I know a lot of people are like, why do we need that fat fuck Bully Ray here, but you know what? I like them together with the Briscoes. I think they make perfect sense in a way. And I did the War Machine Davey Boy Smith dynamic. I thought the announce team did a pretty good job getting over their history and why it wasn't working, and it ends up costing them the match. 3.5. I enjoyed it though. What about you?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that Briscoes and Bully Ray go fucking hand in hand. I mean, people forget the Briscoes are ECW as shit. There was I remember promos of them way back in the early ROH days when they're doing the promos that they were even doing on BriscoeBrothers.com, where they were talking about, you know, ECW matches, talking about Terry Funk and Bull Rope or in barbed wire matches and how that's what influenced them to watch wrestling. I mean, the Briscoes are kind of like the Dudley Boys of this era in some ways. I mean, you know, they're badass, reckless. They both have a mouth. They can cut promos, but they can also fight. They back it. You know what I mean? Like, people who don't think that goes together are fucking retarded. But Bully Ray is good for the... I think Bully Ray is honestly good for the company. It's the kind of guy that they can bring in. He makes perfect sense. He's got enough equity and star power built up that people are into him. But he's also got a little bit of counterculture rep. It's kind of, in some ways, it's good that Bully Ray has a reputation for being a hard ass, for being an asshole, for stiffing people and shit like that backstage, because if he puts his stamp of approval on guys, if he puts a stamp of approval on the company, then that just makes people believe, oh, they're legit. Oh, you know what? Fuck Bully Ray, he's a dick. But if he says that the Briscoes are tough, then I believe him because he's an asshole and he doesn't say stuff like that for just no reason. You know? So I think people need to realize that that works for a lot of people and it works in general. I mean, there's a lot to the psychology of wrestling, and I think Bully Ray's a guy that can definitely help the company.
And he's a great promo.
Yeah, exactly. He can talk people into the building and he can piss everybody off in the building. You know, I mean, he's a great guy. He's a great sign for ROH. You think about just a few years back, I mean, he was on fire in TNA, and yeah, he was in great shape, but realistically, he wasn't having great matches. The reason why everyone was going gaga for Bully Ray in TNA was that promo. Yep, was that character work. So he could definitely bring that to the table for ROH. This match itself, I mean, War Machine, again, as I said, War Machine workhorses. I mean, they bring so much. Then you got Bulldog Jr., who's, I think, one of my kind of under-the-radar favorite guys, who I don't see him enough to really put him high on lists at the end of the year. But when I do see him, I always love what he does. He brings a lot of legitimacy to his matches. He's a big, strong hoss guy. Mixing it up here, then you have him and Roman Reigns fighting in the middle of the match to set up more Killer Elite Squad versus War Machine matches down the line. I mean, this is good stuff. I gave this 3.25 star. Great match for what it was, and realistically brought some violence and some brawling to a show that has a lot of kind of more high spotty matches, and so that's nice to kind of bring things back down to earth.
Yeah, I will say, I'm going to Wrestle Circus, and my match that I wanted to see, but they didn't book it, was Davey Boy Smith Jr. versus Matt Riddle, just because Davey Boy Smith was trained by Billy Robinson for MMA type stuff, and I would have liked them to do do what Kane Justice and then the Bone Collector did on CWF Mid-Atlantic, work that type of shoot style with some pro wrestling mixed in, but I can't get everything what I want.
No.
And it's a fresh matchup because, you know, I mean, we've seen, like, Riddle's working Brian Cage, and we've seen Riddle work Cage, and I would like to see a little fresher matchup. But, hey, you can't get what you want. What do you think of the Las Vegas street fight between the Hardys and the Young Bucks and Roppongi Vice?
There's a lot of obvious fuckery with the Hardy Boys trying to not get sued. They're doing the chops to Roppongi Vice to kind of set up the delete so that they're not just doing the delete thing for the suck it delete back and forth. And it really kind of made Roppongi Vice feel like an afterthought early on in the match, which kind of annoyed me. Throughout the match, I mean, Roppongi Vice really were the workhorses though of the match. I mean, Rocky with the thumbtack sleeve, I thought was great for the forever clotheslines. Trent brings in more tacks. He's getting bumped on the tacks. I mean, Meltzer drivers on tax. I mean, it's all over the place, but a lot of the work was being done by Roppongi Vice, so I kind of think it sucks that they were treated in some ways as an afterthought for this.
And I can understand that, but the key of this match was Roppongi Vice was going to have to carry the workload because the big match is at Mania, not at Mania, but Mania weekend is the big singles ladder match between the Hardys and the Bucks. So they kind of had to tease some interactions and tease some big spots, but they couldn't really we couldn't go all full out Bucks versus Young Bucks Hardys versus Young Bucks, because that's supposed to be saved for the big ladder match, you know?
Yeah, no, and I totally get that. There's a lot of wild spots. Obviously, the finish with the huge senton off the gigantic ladder through the table was great. I think the Hardys looked good for, how old they are. I mean, those guys can still pretty much go at the level that they could even before, maybe a little slower in some spots. Roppongi Vice were really the MVPs, stars of the match. They did all the work. Young Bucks, obviously, they know their characters. They hit all their spots so crisp, so clean every time. Crowd gets super behind him. So I gave this 3.5 stars. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it got nutty. It was crazy. It was spot fest work. But, I mean, the last show, the pay-per-view, the final battle, I thought that the Bucks got overshined in their spot festdom because there were so many spot fests on the card. But here, I feel like they were able to outdo everything else on the card, and then in the end, definitely still feel like this was special.
Yeah, I went 3.5 too, and I agree with everything you said. I just thought the key was Roppongi Vice was pretty much the foil and actually the segregation between the two teams, and I thought the Hardys and the Bucks did a really good job teasing a lot of stuff and teasing a lot of confrontations, and we really didn't get the payoff, which is smart, because that should be at the next big show, which is Mania Weekend.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And then we get the main event of Cole and Daniels, and I gave that 3.5 stars, too. We opened up with Daniels' promo, which was good, and I thought the match started slow, but then Daniels got busted open. I loved Cole working the cut with the cross faces. I thought that was, like, my favorite part of the match. A kick to the head. I thought that was well done. Really nice near submission was well done. Cole with a big boot to the cut, and I enjoyed all the psychology of Cole working over the cut, but it still the match felt like it was missing something. Still, it was still a good match. 3.5 stars. What were your takeaways?
Yeah, right there with you. 3.5 stars. I think Cole brought hatred and violence in the beginning, but I've seen him turn it up even hotter. He can play psychopath really well. He can be violent and aggressive really well. And I think he didn't quite get all the way to the top here, which I think this was the place where he should have gone all out as he can. The blood, I think Daniels was playing dead a little bit too long at times and really felt like he was just laying there like a corpse and not really adding much to the match. Then he starts bleeding, and I do like the blood. And again, I'm with you. I think that Cole did a great job working with the cut, making the blood work. Kaz does a great thing where he really, I don't know if he blades, I assume that he does, but he always gets the cut kind of over his eye, so it looks like a hard way more than it looks like he bladed. I'm going to assume he blades, and I hope that he does, but I like the way that he does it because you get the blood, it comes down the side into the eye instead of just the middle of the forehead that a lot of guys used to do when blading was more prevalent. I think it looks better, looks more realistic that way. But I also think that I heard an argument for this, and people said the blood's fine in ROH if it's used sparingly. I agree, but this is 2 times in a row that the blood is Daniels. The last time it was the Ladder War, and it was Daniels blading, and I feel like it's going to become a trope if it's the same guy as the old man bleeding. You know what I mean? And I think, yes, use the blood sparingly, but don't make it always Daniels is the one who gets to use the blood, because then it becomes a trope and you get less legs out of it in that regard. So yeah, Kaz comes out, and at this point I was 100% sure that he was going to turn on Cole, but I didn't know that necessarily meant Daniels was going to win. Then Daniels hits 3 best moonsault over in a row, so I'm like, okay, he wins, and he does. 3.5 stars, good match. The promo in the beginning was the best part, I think, probably in some ways. The blood was great, and the violence, I think the violence should have been turned up just a little bit more from Cole, but, I mean, he did really well here.
Yeah, overall, though, I had to give this show a thumbs up. Nothing really blew me away, but I thought the wrestling from top to bottom was really consistent. And I can get behind a show that just delivers inconsistency. What about you?
Yeah, agreed. Easy thumbs up, definite watch. And I'm like, I feel weird because the TVs, when they're bad, they're really bad. But when they're good, they're quite enjoyable. And then the pay-per-views have been solidly, and the VODs have been solidly delivering great shows. But it feels weird trying to evangelize ROH to people because, I mean, people just aren't really that interested right now, so we'll see. But if they continue like this, they might still be on that track where a couple months back we were saying ROH looks like they were getting their footing.
Yeah, hopefully. At this point, why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on 2 great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back. And we're back with CWF Mid-Atlantic. And this is this is the show where we get the payoffs of all the music videos and vignettes and promos from all this new talent that getting an opportunity here. And it opens up with PB Smooth, who is giant
7 foot savage.
7 foot savage, Rosado Swans. What'd you make of this?
I like the feeling out process in the beginning, as Swans realizes pretty quickly he can't go with his normal game plan of just running him over, because PB Smooth is bigger and younger than him. So Swans starts to use some experience and some of his kind of his grappling type stuff, and then also getting distractions from Sharp. The distractions aren't enough until PB seems to just get completely infatuated with fucking with Sharp, as he goes out of his way to mess with him, even when Sharp isn't really doing anything. So then from there, Otto Swans starts working over the shoulder. I like that, you know, from having kind of worked over his shoulder so much, he's able to take him down with a shoulder tackle after earlier that didn't work. I loved the cutoff from PB with the spinning side slam. I thought that was good as a hope spot. But again, he gets distracted. Boom, caught with a spine buster, and it's over. 2.25 star. I don't know that they did necessarily such a great job with PB Smooth here. But I guess I kind of understand, maybe they're trying to set more up down the line.
Yeah, I'm with you. I gave it 2.25 also. It felt, at the midway point, it felt like Smooth got blown up. Am I exaggerating? Am I imagining this?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't notice that, but that doesn't mean that that's not the case.
It seemed like he was sucking in some serious wind, and it looked like the bumps became pretty weak at that point. And it just looked like he was struggling, and then they went to a rest hold. So it looked like he got blown up. I really wasn't all blown away after this, but I thought it was a solid match. There were moments, so there was some good stuff and some bad stuff, and so we'll go 2.25. But the next match, ooh, Dominic Granini, the Bone Collector. Did I say his name right?
Guarini, I think is how it's
said. Okay. The Bone Collector versus Kane Justice. I went 4 stars on this. I love this. I like Kane right off the bat being so swarmy. Big takedown by Guarini right off the bat. The Bone Collector gets the leg. Kane gets the ankle. Loving the shooting and the submission attempts. Kane stopping the arm, which was a big spot. Kane's big spot was a cheap shot, pro wrestling, kicking it. So I liked how when Kane got desperate, you go to a pro wrestling spot to gain the advantage. The Bone Collector was really good at selling the arm. I thought he did a great job selling that arm. I thought we got a great hope spot with that ankle pick. Kane just kicking that arm, just really good kicking the arm, setting it up. Kane's flurry was incredible during the stretch, and that freaking finish was incredible. I was like, fuck yes. I mean, this was what we needed to see. Kane was still a swarmy bastard, but he made me scared of him. In a way, I mean, you believe that this guy was the real deal, that he could kick some ass, and that his style was superior to the Bone Collector's. And I definitely want to see the Bone Collector come back. I thought this was great how they mixed pro wrestling and mixed martial arts spots, and was just able to come through with this. And that finish was just beautiful. I was just beating the crap out of him and then hitting the twist ending at the same time. Just really vicious. And plus, I thought having it there in the CW at the Sportatorium, it gave it a totally different vibe, because it was something, you wouldn't expect it to be at an old school promotion, because this is such a new type of nuanced thing they do now. But man, I thought it made the match even more special.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you, and I think Kane. I mean, Dominic Greeny looked fantastic here, and I've been kind of championing him. And as Brad Stutz starts out the match saying people are already referring to this as a dream match and these guys' young, short careers, I mean, I was saying this is a dream match. I've been saying it for a while. I was super excited. It delivered in spades. Kane Justice he's like Conor McGregor, and he's got that Trevor Lee influence in the world of sport. He's like Trevor Lee style world of sport, so he's like doing the knockoff of the knockoff, which is still fine by me because he's a Carolina guy, but he's also got the real shoot background that makes him look great. But I mean, coming down cocky and essentially being like, oh fuck, this guy, who is he? Dom takes him down, and then he goes to the floor to grab his knee pads from underneath the ring. And yeah. That was fucking great. He was like, he thought it was a night off because it was some nobody. Then they just start shooting on each other. I mean, on the mat, these guys are rolling back and forth.
Let me interrupt the knee pads real quick. It's like an old trope with Buddy Landell. Whenever he didn't have knee pads on, it meant he wasn't taking bumps that day. But when he had knee pads on, it meant he was going to be bumping all over the place for his opponent. So I just love that little thing there.
Oh, Jesus. You know, that's what I was trying to think. Because I was actually going to say somebody other, and I was like trying to think of who the reference was being. I was going to say not Ric Flair and not, God damn it, whatever. But Buddy Landell is exactly who it is that I was thinking of. He's like kind of that hybrid Buddy Landell, Conor McGregor, and the kind of world of sport influence Trevor Lee stuff all mixed into this one guy. And so, yeah, like when Kane gets the rope break, and then before Dominic can even reset, he grabs an ankle pick. I thought that was fucking great, because it's just a little bit underhanded, a little bit shitty, but not necessarily cheating. I kind of loved that. Then when Kane does, he posts the shoulder and the arm, and it's like posting the shoulder is becoming a trademark move for Kane Justice, which I just think is fucking great. This guy's got trademark cheating spots at this point, which I think is fantastic for a guy, because you know what to, you know, you kind of know what to expect, and it works into his finish, so it's fantastic. Like, such a great kind of psychology-wise. Then he's all over the shoulder looking for the arm. So much good shit. The super belly-to-belly I thought was fantastic. Everything Kane does, Dom's got a counter. He dives off the middle rope. He catches him in a triangle. And then, yes, the finish. I mean, Kane just is looking for the twist ending.
Yeah, that triangle spot was fucking awesome.
Yeah, wasn't that amazing? So Kane's looking for the twist ending. Dominic's got it blocked, so he just hammer fists him in the side of the head until he breaks his grip. Boom, locks in the twist ending. It's over. And I was just like, Christ. And I debated. I mean, Rex...
And Stutzy's call on it, twist ending, was awesome too, you know?
Yeah, it puts... I mean, the whole presentation puts everything over. As you said, this is the most high-tech kind of shoot-style grappling mixed with, you know, that old-school Carolinas, mid-Atlantic stuff. I mean, goddamn. And I debated somewhat. Rex Tycoon from Wrestling With Words, he said he's like 4.5 stars. This is one of his match of the year contenders already. I was talking to QT over there as well about it. I was debating, and I was like, something about the presentation was stopping me. And as we're talking now, I'm like, well, with the fucking insane star ratings that I'm giving to all the WXW matches from over the weekend that were like Ambition and Inner Circle that were in smaller buildings and all that. I mean, the presentation doesn't matter. It's about the in-ring work. This is a 4-star match.
You went 4 stars?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, Kane Justice is becoming one of those guys now where I'm like, okay, how is he going to pop me? How is he going to surprise me? I mean, his psychology is so good. His character work is so good. Right now, I'll say it. He's my MVP of CWF Mid-Atlantic through March.
Yeah.
I know we were going to have 2 more weeks, so it could change. I mean, it was him and Chet Sterling. We're battling it out for a while. along with Eric Royal and Lee Wilkins. But man, it's this match puts Kane Justice right now as my MVP. And last year, it was clearly Trevor Lee was the MVP of the company last year. But right now, man, Kane Justice getting a main event, this is huge. And he's my MVP of the company right now. What about you?
Yeah, no, and I do love the, he's the bone collector, but I'm the belt collector, and I just love that as he's going into.
Yeah, I love that line. Yeah, I love that line.
Yeah, it's just a
smarmy little line.
This, yeah, Kane Justice, I mean, he's something special, and I totally agree. Easily the MVP of CWF Mid-Atlantic. I mean, I'm hearing conversations, if we go too much longer at the pace that he's going, if he stretches his legs and is working in other places, he's in that top 25 for the year conversation pretty soon here.
Yeah, I just want to see him get out and get some more bookings. The kid deserves it, man. I don't know how he is about traveling, but, man, there's a lot of places in North Carolina to work. This kid needs to get out there, get in the car, and take bookings and travel. You know, that's how you're going to get your name out there. He just needs to, you know, he works with Brad Stutz and get Stutzy to put a big, I mean, I want to see him in PWX, you know? I mean, this kid needs to get out there and then tear it up, you know? And the guy has the character work. He has damn good worker, has a good gimmick. I mean, the guy, he's the triple threat right now. I mean, and the kid works hard and he wants to get better, which is even you can just tell, you know?
Yeah, no, there's obvious progression there, and that doesn't come from nothing.
And then we get followed up with another really totally different match, style match, obviously, but a pretty damn good one, too. What do you think of Chip Day versus Alex Daniels?
I think Daniels does such a great job of making this real-life Ben Affleck thing work. I mean, the multiple shirts and just kind of playing up the whole thing, it popped me, and I think it pops the crowd as well. It's just kind of fun and stupid. Then the match starts, and Alex tries to jump the gun, super aggressive, going after Chip Day from the start, and I kind of like that he's really wants to get at him, but it's, you know, almost like he knows what to expect from Chip Day and that he can't help but try to just go for it first thing. So I kind of like that. It makes sense in a lot of ways because he knows that Chip Day is really aggressive, super hard striker, doesn't want to even get him a chance to get uncorked. Then they start just kicking the shit out of each other. Alex Daniels pulls the ref into the corner saying that his arms hurt from this bad kick. He uses that ref distraction thing to get the jump with a sneak attack on Chip, but he doesn't play it off like, oh, it didn't hurt. He's still continuously selling the arm. I love that because it gets Day's strikes over as being really devastating, and it's just that Alex Daniels is trying to use the trickery that he can. And then, you know, Chip Day uses a little bit of trickery of himself after that as he kind of teases Alex to get him to come after him on the ramp. He boots him in the face before he can even get out of the ropes. And yeah, then they really start kicking each other. Like at that point, you think they've been throwing strikes. Then they start kicking the shit out of each other. Huge flying enziguris, big nasty fucking kicks from Chip Day. Double stomp attempt from Alex Daniels misses. Then he just gets caught with a crucifix. And it's, I would have liked maybe one last big strike into the crucifix, but still flash pin. Flash finishes like that always work for me on these big kind of heavy striking style matches just because it comes across more like a, you know, like a boxing match or a striking competition where you can kind of get finished off of anything super fast. So I kind of love that psychology in a strike-based match. 3.5 stars. Both these guys looked great. I would like to see maybe even a little bit more time because they did feel rushed. But, you know, it did actually also maybe work in their favor either way. I don't know. But, yeah, both great workers, both solid strikers. And I think this match did a really good job of getting over Alex Daniels, you know, on his debut in the company.
Yeah, it was a second match in a row where both people got over by the end of the match. And that's not as easy to do as people think. And when one person's winning and one person's losing. And second match in a row where both guys got over, I too went 3.5. I loved it. It was a big strike, big move, a sprint, and these guys brought it, and it was great. Really strong match, and the crowd really respected both guys. Then we got Eric Andrews versus Cool J, ends up being his mystery opponent. Pretty much Andrews just murders the fuck out of him. You know, it was what it was. Entertaining, and they need to just beat the crap out of him. What you make of it?
Yeah, Eric Andrews really took it to him. Liked the side slam, looked really nasty. Cool J's strikes and fighting back kind of barely register on Andrews, and he just finishes him off. I gave it 2 stars. I think good, solid squash match, but, you know, not much to it.
And then we got the Kernodle brothers with CL Party talking about the tag team and listing them all. That looks like quite the damn tag team tournament, tell you the truth. What'd you say?
Oh, yeah. No, every team brings something special to it, and every team is at least good.
Yeah, loaded to bear. And then we get a really fun promo from Stokely Hathaway out of it. Well, what'd you make of everything in there?
I just think Stokely is so good. He can be fun-loving and jokey, but he could also turn it up here, and he's playing that old school more, you know, the people that he's talking to want that kind of less wink and nod, smart wrestling Twitter style promo. So he hits more old school money promo here, talking about, oh, all the trophies and all the belts and all this and that that we're going to win, and there's no question. I think good stuff from Stokely. Always comes across believable and smooth.
Yep. And then we get the main event, which is Smith Garrett versus Xyrus. What you make of all this, man?
This is a hot fucking start. I mean, Cyrus is laying the boots to Garrett hard from the beginning, but Garrett is such a just a fire plug, as he won't be kept down for longer than a few seconds at a time. Then they settle into Cyrus kind of working systematically, going after him. And he was doing, I could notice a kind of an attack strategy. Garrett is known for the injured neck, surgically repaired neck. And Cyrus was in some ways going for the neck, but in other ways it felt like he was putting more pressure trying to smother him than less about trying to go after the injured neck. So he was attacking the throat to seem to cut off his breathing, then attacks to the chest and midsection like he's trying to essentially... like I said, smother him, take his wind from him. But Garrett, again, you know, he's Mr. Cardio, works out super great, so it doesn't end up working, as Garrett thinks he's beaten him up enough, sets up for the DUI, but just gets kind of body rolled over, pinned. Quick brawl, a lot of hot action, but it really, I feel like it never really settled in and got into like that upper echelon level work. Felt like, as I said, there was a story there that I picked up on, but I don't think... that they did a lot to really tell the story. I think that with a little bit longer, they could have kind of gotten into it and shown Garrett kind of really more predominantly get a second wind with a comeback and everything, instead of kind of a flash pin here. 2¾ star for me. Didn't, like I said, I think it, for all the build and how hot it's been, I would have liked a lot more. And I felt like, yeah, the narrative was missing a little bit, and it was a little bit fast.
Yeah, I can see where you're saying you want a lot more, but I think this is just like the appetizer, because the whole premise of this show was to get the five guys in for the challenge match. You didn't want them to have their feud blow off here. This is just kind of like another juncture, another little pit stop on their feud, and so I thought it worked. What they did, I thought was fine. I liked Garrett running to the ring right off the bat and the brawling. And I thought they did a good solid job. Nothing blow away. And I thought the finish, how they played it, was a perfect one for, like, the first step in this feud of a match-wise. And I overall, though, I gave it 2¼. It wasn't anything blow away. It was solid average match. But I think they're saving themselves for a much bigger one when the time calls for it. And the show then ends on a really killer Johnny P video package, highlighting all the talent going into the big match. What you make of this video?
Yeah, again, Johnny P brings his signature style here. I think he did a great job putting together the six-pack challenge promo video. And I'm excited for that six-pack challenge, and I didn't even think about what you said. I mean, the Xyrus-Garrett feud obviously continues. I don't know why I was thinking this might have been the blow-off. And I think that's just, I'm so used to feuds like this not having clean finishes and matches if they're continuing. So that's, I think, what kind of threw me off. But definitely looking forward to the six-pack challenge and seeing where everybody goes, because all the guys in it are guys I at least like, you know? I mean, yeah. Some of the guys are some of my top favorite guys.
Totally agree. I mean, and there's so many opportunities there for some talent. Really interesting stuff. Wow, what a great show! I mean, really great show. Just booked flawlessly, and King Justice MVP. And they had really good wrestling, good promos, good angles. I thought this thing was just a pleasure to watch. What about you?
Yeah, no, flew by. Great episode, great wrestling. Again, I mean, I think we beat dead horse on this, but free on YouTube, guys. So much shitty wrestling that you pay for, including WWE pay-per-views on the award-winning WWE Network. Meanwhile, you get this every week for free, and it's phenomenal. So, I mean, it's... You can't beat the price. You can't beat the value.
And it's the closest thing to territorial wrestling that's out there in this day and age. I mean, this is a territory. And they they don't have a giant roster, and they bring in some outside talent. But, man, this is how a territory is run. And all the characters mean something. They run angles that mean something. And everything matters. And you might think, oh, this is the throwaway squash or whatever, but guess what? It's there to build this guy into this talent. It's everything makes sense, and it's so well done. I can't put over enough. Next up, we go back to Ring of Honor and look at a little Ring of Honor TV. And, you know, we were talking about this offline. I mean, off of having a conversation. But, you know, it's so weird that they'll be watching this TV because it's so behind. And you know what's going to happen sooner than later? I'm sure they're going to do the Ring of Honor in Japan tour, right? And
they're
going to air that, right?
Yeah, they're going to have to start airing that. I mean, the show's already happened. I don't know if you caught them, but I didn't even get the time to watch them this year.
I watched some of the Pilot Pimp matches, and they were good. I mean, it's just... Yeah, I just they need to do something with their TV to make it more current or on top. I don't know. It's hard. I mean, it's hard with a tape program in 2017.
Well, and running their pay-per-views on Fridays because of the syndication on Sunday. Like, when that was explained to me that was the reason that they do it that way, I just got so confused because I'm like, they'd rather air this the Sunday after the pay-per-view, then just air something on the Sunday of the pay-per-view that, like, doesn't plug the pay-per-view. Like, it would make more sense to me in that way, almost. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if this was the episode of the TV that theoretically played on the same day as the pay-per-view, it wouldn't be as glaring. But there's even issues here that were out of date even before the pay-per-view happened. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. Like, this is just... There was times where this got hard to watch for me because I'm just sitting there thinking, like, I know that this doesn't matter. I know that this doesn't matter. I know, you know what I mean? Because I already know everything that's happened. And it's not from reading spoilers or backstage dirt. It's literally just from watching their own product live when it happened on TV. And then I didn't even think about it, but you talking about the Honor Rising shows being the TV again. I mean, last year when that happened...
I'm assuming that's what's going to happen.
I pray they don't do that again, because last year it felt like it was 2 months of just nothing.
Yeah.
And that pay-per-view was good. This is the biggest issue with ROH right now, is they come off of a hot pay-per-view, and then it feels like they completely reset and they lose any momentum and any steam they could have possibly had.
So they can't even put over their own pay-per-view except on Twitter, and that's not the same thing.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then push the VODs. I mean, I know it's because they're owned by Sinclair and they have to have cheap stuff for the TV for Sinclair, but they'd almost be better off just not having the TV or doing, like, clip show style stuff where you just say that these are random matches from house shows and you don't attempt to even have any kind of narrative on the TV show, because it's, I mean, at times it gets ridiculous.
I'm totally with you. But hey, let's talk about it. It opens up with the Young Bucks versus Coast to Coast. What you make of this?
Well, I mean, open up the show, glaring, the Bucks have the titles. We just saw a pay-per-view where the Bucks were challenging for the titles, not even losing the titles. You know what I mean? So it's so out of whack, so out of date. They try to not mention it on the TV and act like, you know, whatever. But I mean, it's jarring for me. Coast to Coast need a different name, and they need to not be obsessed with doing the Coast to Coast dropkick thing as their move. It's just, that's going nowhere. Honestly, that can't be your thing.
Did the black guy didn't even do it?
Kind of. Like, yeah, he did.
It looked like he cheated it.
Yeah, he kind of cheated it. But, like, that's just, it's, you're not going to be, they're never going to be a big time act called Coast to Coast because you guys hit double Coast to Coast drop kicks.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. You know what I mean? It's just, that's just not a thing. So they need to drop that because they're fine workers and I think that they could get over. Bucks, I mean, all their stuff is double teams and they're just, they're baby faces. Like, they're supposed to be heels. Everything they do is double teams, but they are the most over guys in the fucking company as baby faces because they do cool moves. And that's kind of what I was talking about with Kenny King. It's like the Bucksification of ROH has, you know, made it to a point where, like, that's not a heel thing. Match was fine, though. I mean, you know, just a show-off for the Bucks, but that's it. I mean, I don't know. 2 3/4 star? I don't really put ratings on these matches, usually.
Yeah, I didn't even give it a rating. The only thing I rated was the main event, I think. Then we got a Kingdom Rebellion highlights and a Leo Rush interview, and Kenny King confronts Rush. It was what it was, and then, you know, and Rush is leaving. It's kind of like, okay, great, DOA. But then we get our top prospect match. It's Kurt Stallion, a guy from Texas, versus Preston Quinn. You know, I liked Quinn's promo. I thought Quinn was fantastic in this match. I thought Quinn threw a great punch. He's great at the little things, like when he throws a punch, he shakes off the hand, because you know what? I'm sure when you punch somebody, your hand hurts. So I thought that was a good touch. I thought Stallion's bumps were really good here, but it just was way too short. Stallion goes over, but they didn't really get him, allowed him to go on offense too much, and so he kind of the match. I mean, though he's winning, it really didn't help him much. And I thought Preston Quinn was awesome in it. But he's not the type. But he's not that type. He's not a Ring of Honor style worker. So he would never even fit in on the roster. But I thought he was fantastic. I think these two guys, they gave him 15 minutes, could easily have had a 4-star match. I thought they were good together, but they didn't allow Stallion to shine at all. Oh, really, for the most part. What do you think?
Yeah, Stallion opening promo, good for a green guy. Kind of promo from Stallion. I mean, he's really young in the business. Preston Quinn, good promo, like you said. Kurt really shines selling underneath, and TV matches like this, I find a lot of times they cut out long heat segments if they even had it, so who knows. But yeah, I mean, that probably could have really made the match if you had a lot of good selling from Stallion from underneath. Because, I mean, stuff that he even does, like with his cutoff, with the headbutt underneath the chin, I thought looked great. Kind of the diving upper headbutt right underneath the chin, I thought was a great little spot from Stallion. And stuff like that really makes him kind of shine and stand out. So, you know, I don't know if they cut out kind of the long heat segment. Like you said, Quinn looks good, except for that brainbuster. He seemed to sit fully down before he dropped Stallion on the brainbuster. I love Shelly was putting it over, textbook brainbuster. And it was like, I think anybody with two eyes could see it was like botched. But I thought that was kind of fun and funny in the middle of the match there. I like the manager grabbing the ankle, trying to get heat and stuff. And yeah, Quinn kicking out of the pile driver was big. Moves on the flying elbow drop and then hits a sliding headbutt for the pin. Again, going kind of calling back to that headbutt from earlier that was probably his most devastating move early in the match, then wins with a sliding headbutt. So I thought it was good. I think you're right that Stallion didn't get over huge, but I think he one of the more solid.
I thought it was the booking. It wasn't his fault. I just thought the booking was bad for him to get over because I felt his fight underneath, I thought he connected to the crowd. But I felt he could have been gotten over so much more if they would have allowed him to show some of his natural charisma.
Yeah, and again, you don't know if the editing kind of butchered the match, which sucks about ROH, because sometimes I wonder that they edit. So, as I said, from the TV taping I went to, the matches were so much better live, and not even just in that, I was caught up in it live thing, but just like the stuff that they edit out a lot of times was the meat and potatoes of the match.
Yep, I'm with you. Then we get a Cody Rhodes is out, and he's challenging Lethal to a Texas bull rope match. I thought this was well done. What you make of it?
Yeah, I love the reference to the Rhodes family bull rope and all that. Good stuff. Crowd is really into Cody Rhodes, and it kind of, a lot of people, I think, question him being in the Bullet Club, or why is he in the Bullet Club, but, I mean, he really works, because he fits the mold of that heel who's actually a babyface.
Yep, no, I'm with you. And then we got Jonathan Gresham versus Dalton Castle. I'm sorry, we got a Jay Briscoe promo about him and Jay White going to lock it up, right?
Yeah.
Good promo. And then we got Gresham versus Dalton Castle. I thought this is full of fun exchanges, but it could have been so much longer. What'd you think of it?
Yeah, it would have been a lot better longer. Loved little stuff from Gresham showing off his more kind of European style grappling tricks. He's doing like a knockoff version of the Lady of the Lake continuously throughout the matches. I think is kind of great in some ways and kind of terrible in others. Castle, whenever he kind of gets upset, he uses his more amateur style grappling and size advantage to help him kind of get the upper hand. But Grisham's got counters for everything. Grisham's also mocking Castle constantly, but in the end, it's Grisham's like size disadvantage is not able for him to overcome as Castle catches him in midair and just hits the bangarang for the win. And I thought that they did a good job putting over Castle in that way. I mean, he's a threat. Even against a guy who cannot wrestle him, which is rare because they do a lot of times show he's a very good grappler. Even if he is in there against a guy who can out wrestle him, he's got other tools. So I think that they did a good job, and hopefully they continue to push Castle, because this could be kind of revamping him as a more serious character if they continue to push him as a guy who is a multi-tool player. And I didn't mean that the way that it probably sounded.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I enjoyed what we got. We could have gotten so much more, though. Then we got a Skrull promo, which, again, I thought this was money, and that's what he's really good at, is his personality. What you make of it?
He comes across like a polished character that I 100% agree that with you that everyone would like, but for me, it doesn't work. It feels pointless meandering. He's not pushing any match. He's shouting and rhyming. It's all stuff that doesn't work for me. But then I turn around and I've been watching the O.J. Simpson thing on Netflix when I'm not watching wrestling, which is very rare. So I've gotten through about 3 episodes. And Johnny Cochran's kind of rapping, rhyming style of delivery, I remember thinking it was super corny in the 90s and then still thinking it's super corny. But it got O.J. away with murder. So it works on most people.
That's funny. What'd you think of the main event?
Main event tag I thought was really fucking good. Made Big Pun look like a star.
Yep.
The weapons, brutal shots, they're just all killing each other. But the entire time, I think the only guys who really get shine are Rowe and Martinez. I mean, Martinez looks fucking insane. Pop-up power slam onto Martinez looks good and like just nuts. That spot was amazing. Yeah, big dive from Punishment to the floor, sit out chokeslam through the table, and then, I mean, he beats up both members of War Machine, and he turns on his tag team partner, and I'm just like, god damn, this guy is money, and as you said, strap the rocket, put the belt on him, sure as shit, because right here, he looks like he's ready.
Yep, and the whole turn was weird, because they didn't tease it at all, did they?
No, I mean, other than the fact that if you watch the pay-per-view, you kind of already saw that he was pretty much a face.
Yeah, that was just weird. But yeah, I liked it too. I gave it 3 stars. I thought it was a good, fine, fun brawl. And then when we take a break, and when we come back, we'll finish up with some NXT.
The PWO-PTBN feed has changed its name. Now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back. We're back looking at NXT, and we open up with the Ely Brothers with a promo, it was what it was. And then the Author of Pain versus the Ely Brothers, and it's pretty much a squash. But we get an interesting Ellering promo. What were your thoughts here on all that?
The Ely Brothers?
Oh, yeah, but also with I'm sorry, but during the Ellering promo, DIY gets interrupts in promos and Revival promos, and then Regal comes out and sets up the three-way dance at the next NXT TakeOver special.
Yeah, it was the Ely brother or the Ely brothers, their promo was painful. I mean, when the one guy, he says, "Blood is thicker than whatever keeps you two together," and like the whole time deadpan and I was just like, "God, this is bad. I cannot believe they let that on TV like that." But But the angle is fine. They squashed.
We could have got a commercial break during that.
Yeah, right. I would have taken that. But yeah, I mean they seem to have added a new intro to the Authors of Pain theme and remixed it so it sounds less like the Sanity theme. I like that. I thought that the Gabe Ely looked somewhat impressive to begin with. I think both guys have an impressive look. They just need to turn it up. But then when Rezar just clotheslines the shit out of one of them and then headbutts the other dude on the apron and then it's over. Thought that was good. The post-match promos, the stuff with Regal, setting up the three-way tag. Again, I agree with you. Not a fan of three-way tags, but I like all three of these teams. So I'm excited in a way to see what they can do with the format, but I'm hesitantly optimistic on how good it will be.
Yeah, I mean, you have arguably two of the best tag teams in wrestling right now in that thing. So, I'm expecting a good match, though. Then we got a Heavy Machinery promo or vignette coming soon. I thought it was a nice piece of business. What about you?
Yeah, I think it's funny because they've already debuted before, but
yeah,
I'm excited
already
for the
debuted,
team.
And they got over. That's why, yeah, when they weren't really expecting to. Then we got this Asuka vignette. And they're doing a weird Ember is the moon and Asuka's the sun type of thing. Really weird. What you make of it?
I the premise is odd, but the video was great. Like, I think that this really made this feel like the most important match on the TakeOver. Just the way it was shot and everything about it worked really well to I mean, I got excited about Ember or about Asuka and being the dominant champion and the stuff that she's saying. You know, they should just call it the Asuka division. There's no women's revolution. It's the Asuka revolution. And they should just call it the Asuka championship. And I just thought all of that was really fucking well done and really great. But I get what you're saying, that the overall premise of her being the sun and Ember's the moon thing is was a little cheesy and hokey. But I thought that the kind of promo package itself was done really well.
Yep, and then this leads us to a Nikki Cross squash. She beats the shit out of the girl, but the key thing here is the angle, and it's No Way Jose and Ty Dillinger come out and attack all the Sanity members, but they end up getting cut off and get their ass beat. They got their own beat down. What'd you make of this?
Yeah, I like it, and I know where they're going, so I do like the whole idea that they can't... obviously, they can't fight them off because there's just too many of them, but it seems silly to have them keep doing it. Time and time again, they think that they're going to somehow beat Sanity because there's not enough of them. The squash match was whatever. That Marcy Australia girl, I don't know. I mean, you know, stranger things have happened, but I don't necessarily know if she's going to end up being a great worker. And I liked the setup of the squash with her doing her move over and over again. I would have actually liked if they had just had the match just end with the referee calling the match because she just keeps hitting the move on the girl even though she's just lifeless and limp. And yeah, the post-match brawl was I don't know, it kind of makes the baby faces look a little dumb, but whatever.
No, yeah, I'm with you. And then we get a the coming soon vignette again, but this time it's clearly, I don't know how I missed it last time, but it's clearly Tommy End playing his new character's name, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know how we missed that last time. And then we get this Cien Almas angle where he starts fucking around with Ho-Ho Loon, but then Orny Lorcan stands up for him. I understand the angle, but it felt like, he's a professional wrestler. How is he going to get bullied, you know? It just feels ridiculous. What you make of it?
Yeah, I know, but I think they did a good job of not showing him get too much like he's getting bullied, and more just that Almas was picking a fight with him. And, I mean, Ho-Ho was, like, standing up for himself somewhat, so I kind of get where they're coming from, but, or, like, the setup for the angle, but it really does completely neuter Ho-Ho and make him look like he's nothing. What I like of it is Biff Busick telling him to back the fuck off and then cutting a promo, and I think Biff Busick is honestly an underrated promo. He's not John Cena, but he's definitely really good at coming across like he's Biff Busick or Oney Lorcan. Really believable in his character and who he is, and kind of gets through his promos and seems intense and aggressive. And then I like that he cuts the promo and it's to set up a match for next week. And it's not like, oh, we're going to wrestle tonight. You know, it's setting up something down the line. So I like it. I thought that this whole angle was pretty good, but I get what you're saying about the bullying thing. It is kind of weird.
Yeah, I understand. But then when the main event is Rude versus Cassius Ohno, what you make of this?
I like the start with Rude kind of trash talking, and then, you know, like Ohno just really comes at him. He's then, like, after a little bit, Rude obviously takes over. I don't see where the cutoff is because they go to commercial break and come back, and he's just kind of in control. He's being really physical, and he's like focusing pretty good on, he's like mostly pulling Ono's hair, it seems, and then he's got him like in a chin lock. Ohno cuts him, or yeah, takes back over with a jawbreaker. I like when he hits him with a big rolling elbow, and you could see Rude falling towards the ropes, and it's like Ono's been watching Rude's matches, so he goes to grab him before he can like hit the floor, because that's something Rude's been doing. I like that sense of urgency, and it really felt real, like a real fight. So I like that a lot. Big bump to the floor over the top rope from Ohno here. Go to break and come back, and at least that time they showed us how Rude took control, because you can assume that it was from sending Ohno to the floor that he gets over. And then I liked Ohno countering the vertical suplex into the crash landing suplex. I loved him elbowing the shit out of Rude's punch attempt. I thought that was such a cool little spot from him. But I mean, Rude has just taken a lot of the offense here. And really, I hate to say it, but he's kind of boring. Big elbows from Ohno sends Rude to the floor, and then that's where it comes back. So I like that they kind of played with that early and then paid it off here. Rude trying to take powder as much as he can. The finish is obviously Ono's looking for the cerebral cortex smash. Gets caught in the rope where essentially Rude kind of used Ono's height against him, which I think is another nice little wrinkle as he runs him into the ropes. So while Ohno is coughing and his throat's messed up from hitting the rope, he sets up the glorious DDT, gets the win. It's another one where you can say Rude won somewhat clean. He didn't really do any cheating, but he was underhanded and shitty. But I thought it wasn't a great way to debut Ohno. I really don't think that they made him look good here. Rude took a lot more of the match than I would like. And it might just be kind of that it's a real change of pace from what we've been seeing from Chris Hero on the indies all last year, with him doing a lot of the bully formula. And now that he's back in NXT, he doesn't have as much control in getting to put that match together. So you're going to have to just accept that he goes more back to being not necessarily 50-50, but a lot less of that kind of domineering presence.
What do you mean? Like, overall, what do you make of the match, though?
Overall, I enjoyed the match, but again, as I said, I think that it wasn't a great debut for Ohno, but it did do a good job of kind of pushing along the Rude character.
Yeah, I think my expectation level was just really high for this match. What do you think of Hero working in his jerseys?
I mean, obviously, there's a reason why they made him keep the basketball jersey on. I find it interesting because, I mean, you knew what he looked like when you hired him. It doesn't really affect too much for him, I don't think. Honestly, he still comes across intimidating and very big and scary. But, you know, it's just not a good sign for things to come. And as I said, like, having Rude take so much of this match And then you've also got him. Oh, you have to keep your jersey on. It does kind of feel scary. Like, did they hire him not to fuck with him, but did they hire him with the idea that you're not going to be Chris Hero anymore? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed by the match. I mean, it was a good, solid match, but it just felt like it was lacking. But I mean, they tried hard, but it just wasn't really just. It just didn't engage me at all. I just wasn't able to get me engaged. Overall, though, I thought NXT was a solid show. Nothing special. On paper, the main event looked like it was going to be a Grand Slam home run, and we didn't get that. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And coming out of it, as I said, we were talking about the promo, like, it really felt to me the most important match is Asuka versus Ember Moon. I've heard other people say that as well. I've heard other people say it in a really shitty way, like, oh, it should be the main event of the TakeOver show, no matter what. I'm a little bit more of a traditionalist in that I think that the world title should always be the main event. And I know that that kind of sucks when it comes to, like, the whole Women's Revolution thing, but I don't necessarily think that the match needs to be the main event, but I do kind of think that, like, that's the most important match on the card. So, yeah, coming out of this, that's kind of where I'm at on everything.
Yeah, I totally feel you, man. I totally hear you. That was NXT, man. Tim, do you have anything you got to plug?
Just other podcast, Lucha Undead, interview with the big man at PWO Lost should be coming out next week, next week when you're listening to this. Couple episodes of We'll Do It Live in the Can, exciting, interesting stuff, should be coming out very soon. Just have to stop and actually edit them. So, that's about it. Just make sure to follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Sounds good. Follow me at Tight Angel Wrestling, and we'll see you next week.
I'll be at the reception desk, sketching on flesh, my perception.